From Public Radio International, I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. The pianist Donal Fox is a bridge builder between Johann Sebastian Bach and Thelonious Monk. He plays a sort of music without frontiers, open source music, if you will, with a gift for improvisation that used to be an essential trick in all forms and styles of music, including European classical music. It was called extemporization, and all the great masters, Beethoven, Mozart, Handel, and Bach, wrote open spaces into their scores for spur-of-the-moment musical statements by other performers. The boy wonder of the 19th century piano, Franz Liszt, aged 12, would ask anyone in the audience to provide a theme on which he would perform an extemporary fantasy as long as he felt like it. It's mainly jazz that has kept improvisational skills alive, and now it's Donal Fox and a rare few others who have repositioned that jazz feeling of freedom on the firm old foundations of classical composition and made them all swing. Donal Fox is next on Open Source. First the news. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. This is Open Source, a radio conversation with big internet ears. This hour we're talking about what you could call open source music with the improvisational pianist, a man of many musics, Donal Fox, with Ron Savage on drums and John Lockwood on the string bass. Welcome, Donal Fox. We're listening, of course, to Bach's Air on a G String. What we hear right away is a classical technique and some familiar, very familiar old themes and forms with an improvisational freedom and a certain contemporary touch. Donal, it sounds like what I want to play when I grow up, but maybe you're going to have to explain what it is you're doing. Donal Fox, what are we listening to here?
That was Air in a G-String by the great Johann Sebastian Bach. And people are probably very aware of that beautiful melody. It comes from the Bach Orchestral Suite. And we took it, I arranged it into piano six hands and added the rhythm section to it, and we sort of swung it near the end. And
where's the Fox piece of this?
In this, it was more... I was holding on to Bach's structure and his harmonies and then embellishing and adding the flavor of our 20th, 21st century great music, jazz music, by adding those licks and so forth over the harmonies. And that's what's interesting about Bach is that he's the original blues cat.
Meaning what?
Well, all the way he writes with the harmonies going in a certain direction... chords. They're very similar to jazz. In that you can, once you have that worked out, you can improvise over those harmonies forever. And there's a Bach, I look at him as a teacher in classical and jazz.
Chick Corea has said the same thing to me. Makoto Ozone, the pianist too.
Yeah.
That he lays down the chord structure and then invites you to take off. And he took off himself on these same.
Exactly.
So why is it that so few people can do it? I mean, Chick Corea does it. Mm-hmm. Chucho Valdez does it. He has a wonderful recording of the Chopin Prelude in E minor, number 4 Prelude. Exactly. And yet with him, there's an unmistakable Cuban thing. And Robert Levin, the Mozart improviser, sort of coming the other way out of classical music, is a great improviser too.
Yes.
And yet improvisation has dropped out of the modern education of a classical musician.
Unfortunately, because like you said, historically, all the great European composers that you study in school and people hear, you know, Bach and Beethoven and Brahms and Schumann and so on and so forth, into the 20th century, Bartok and Stravinsky, they all improvised. And that's, improvisation is really spontaneous composition is what it is.
And they expected their players to do it. You've done it with, in the big cadenza mode with modern orchestral pieces. What is that like, and how did you get to be able to do it?
That's fantastic. I mean, it's bringing back, if we could be in Mozart's time, it would be, everybody would be going to the symphony instead of looking at it as a drag, because he'd be on the spot improvising these cadenzas, and you wouldn't know exactly where he'd be going. Where now it's fixed, you know, the player learns a written cadenza, unless they write one out themselves, but it's still fixed. And so T.J. Anderson, one of my great mentors, and I'd studied with him years past, knows of my interest and my talent in working in both these directions, both sides of the fence and improvising. And he wrote this piano concerto where he left, there's no score for the piano. Okay. I mean, he said, I'll write a piece where the cadenza's open. He said, no, I'm going to write a piece. There is no piano part. So there's an orchestral part. And I have to completely make up my piano part based on the materials he uses for the orchestra.
And there's no tradition to borrow from either. I mean, there's no famous cadenzas to steal from or measure yourself against.
You're on. So the audience feels that tension because I'm on a tightrope up there with the orchestra.
A lot of people have heard cadenzas in symphony halls and probably known that the pianist was in a degree on his own there. But explain what that history was.
Yeah, well, it's a great story. Mozart, a lot of times, he didn't even write out his piano part until it had to be published. So Mozart worked from a blank page, too. And the tradition of the cadenza was to show off the instrumentalist. Similar, we have when the jazz breaks, right? You have a drum part. Ron might do a drum break or be bass solo. Mm-hmm. So with an orchestra, in this case, the violin solos, the piano solos would have a moment where they could show off their wear and show off.
Can the three of you demonstrate it on the spot?
Show off their big, fancy chops, and then the orchestra comes back in, and the pianist says,
is always how the orchestra knows how to come back in. But that's another matter.
Yeah.
Can you engage the bass and drums on this on that sort of sport?
Sure. I'll give it. Here's a little thing. We'll start here, and we'll talk about this piece a little later, because this also comes out of Bach from a famous invention that everybody who's ever playing piano, even if you never continue on, gets this piece in the first 2 or 3 years, right?
Well.
And then invariably something like this happens when you're playing it. Can you do that again, please? And then every time you repeat it, you get stiffer and stiffer because you get more and more uptight. So the great thing about improvisation is that it's okay to make mistakes. We can have fun. So let's say we did that and we went. You can recover.
You can.
So let me show you how taking that. How I made a blues out of it. And let's take it right from the last four, John, we'll do it before the blues break there. This part here.
So now I want you to relocate the Bach invention in that wonderful thing you're doing.
Just getting into that, man. We just
I forgive me. I hate to interrupt
going, hey,
it, but
hey,
relocate Johann Sebastian.
Yeah, Johann, come on back in. So what we'll do right there at C, the coda before you go into the drum break, John, Ron. Here we go.
Give us a minute of or a minute and a half.
Yeah, a minute of the bus. So right at C, ready?
Go for it.
And.
Join the conversation with Donal Fox at 877-673-6767. We'll be back after a short break. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source, talking and listening tonight with the composer and pianist Donal Fox. He's a border jumper in music, old music to new music, written music to improvisational music, classical, so-called serious music, to jazz, and written music as intellectual property to free music as part of the gift culture. Our phone is 877-673-6767. Give him a call. Can you hear that intersection between familiar European themes and freestyle contemporary improvisation? 877-673-6767. You were playing, of course, that first wonderful piece from Robert Schumann's Kinderszenen, and I always think of it as My Brilliant Career music from the Australian movie of probably 20 years back. It makes me wonder, though, where do you go for good stuff? What constitutes material that you can work with, Donal?
Well, anything that I just personally love. I mean, it's just a beautiful piece, and it's so timely now, too, in our culture and what's going on in the world, that the piece is written for children, and children are...
Scenes from childhood.
Yeah, and they're our future, so to play that is to think of all the good things instead of concentrating all the negative things that seem to swirl around us. But just beautiful melodies, and any piece that touches me, then I feel that I want to share with the audience in a different context so that I can broaden the interest in the music.
Describe what you were doing with that piece.
Well, first I played it for people to know it pretty much the way it's written.
Straight.
And then I wrote out the bass line for John. And then we switched a little bit. And if we continued on, I changed the rhythm. So instead
you may continue on if you like.
I mean, okay.
There's more to be done with it, I'm sure.
We'll go, for example, John, in the from the top there. Ready? I'm embellishing the melody, which was very simple that Schumann wrote. And I'm adding more of my own notes to it, and I'm changing it from a simple 2-4 feeling, which is original, and adding this triplet feeling. And in musical terms, we're playing on the notes that can be used within those harmonies. And harmonies is simply the movement from sound to sound.
You took the Bach, in a way, further from its foundations than you've taken the Schumann yet. How far do you go with the Kinderszenen?
In this case, I respect Schumann's beautiful piece, and I don't want to go too far away because it's already whole in itself, and unless I can really add something to it that it gives a perspective that is even greater than what the original is, then I respect the original and just add some of my own flavorings. You know, it's like if you don't want to overspice a certain food that you're cooking, the way you no longer taste the turkey.
Does Bach give you more room, though?
I think the Romantic period, the composers are, you know, they're codifying their music pretty much, even the way it's written on the page, the dynamics, that everything's telling you pretty much how to play it. And Bach, it's just notes on the page. There's no very little instruction, and Bach himself was constantly varying his music, so it does give you more freedoms.
Much more like the jazz chart.
Yeah, exactly.
Give us another example or another composer that you work from and take it further, if you like.
Sure. Well, this is the year of one of our national treasures, Gunther Schuller. He turned 80 years young in November.
Amen.
22nd.
Praise God for Gunther. Okay.
And Gunther's had a tremendous career and a tremendous range of interests, from very austere orchestral music to conducting and forming the ragtime ensemble to playing with...
He reinvented ragtime.
He played with Miles Davis in The Birth of Cool and hung up with Ornette Coleman. So there's a range for you about American music. But I have his row. It's a 12-tone row that he's been working with for like 20, 25 years. And I'm on the page, if you look at it, it's just nothing, and I'm going to improvise something, and John's looking at me, and there's no part for you, John. So I'll do a little something. I'll take my headphones off, though.
Okay. This is Donal Fox on a 12-tone row from Gunther Schuller. Happy birthday, Gunther.
John, come in with me. Ready?
Our guest, Donnell Fox, on the piano, playing, what would you call it? Your variations, or your
variations
filling in
Gunther's row.
Gunther's 12-note row. Gunther Schuller, famous also, as well as, you know, for ragtime and so many other things, running the New England Conservatory for years, too, but for the line that all musics are created equal, which is not to say that they end up equal, but the many musics of the world begin at the same starting line. Can I just say that it says something about the several musics of Donnell Fox that the Albany Symphony Orchestra commissioned him alongside other well-known American composers like John Harbison and John Corigliano to write an orchestral arrangement based on one of the traditional Negro spirituals. Donnell Fox chose the song Hear the Lambs A-Crying, and his adaptation will be heard in a first performance next week in Albany. Donnell Fox will not be there because he and his trio will be performing his Monk and Bach project with Jazz at Lincoln Center at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola in Manhattan. Too bad you can't be two places at once. But you can't. How do you inhabit all these different worlds?
Well, sometimes it's kind of tricky, actually. The mindset for composing the orchestral piece, I had to actually stop, and I had a solo recital a few weeks after the deadline of that piece, and I stopped being the performer because the composer is a little more introverted, so it's a bit of a changing clothes, changing hats and personalities, but it keeps life exciting and keeps the creative process really exciting.
How did it come to you, Donnell Fox? I mean, and what is the Donnell piece of this? What's your own history that brings these threads into you?
Well, I think I'm a product of a number of things. My parents, my mother's from Panama, my father's American of Jewish descent, and there was music in the household and lots of different influences right there, spices in the food, spices in the ways of thinking. Being in the latter part of the 20th century, when jazz is really a major force, and Miles and Coltrane and Stravinsky and Bartok, and I remember as a kid putting on The Rite of Spring and then putting on Bertha Cool, and then putting on some Monk, and it was all good. So only later you become an adult and somebody says, well, you have to make a choice. I said, why do I have to make a choice? I dig Monk and I dig Stravinsky. What's the problem? So it's just a matter, it's the melting pot, really, of our culture and how the music's a part of that.
I want to come back to music, but I want to give the callers a chance, too. Our phone is 877-673-6767. Donnell Fox, the pianist of many musics, is our guest this hour. Sebastian is calling from Crotched Mountain, New Hampshire. Welcome, Sebastian.
Thank you. Yes, this was Sebastian, formerly of Sebastian Cambridge.
Oh, hello. How you doing?
Hey, now I'm doing good. I used to call Christopher Sebastian from Cambridge. But now we're on the mountain in New Hampshire.
Yes.
Beautiful.
How you doing?
Very good. So I have a technical question because I'm a huge fan of John Lockwood's playing. And I want to ask...
not because he has the same last name, is it?
It could be.
Frank Sinatra's favorite bass player. He's a wonderful man, too. Go ahead.
Well, my question was how you take that left hand and put it on the bass. And are you just taking... Did Bach write a clear enough bass line that it just transposes? Or do you have to reconfigure it? Or do you sort of synthesize what Bach's doing?
Are we talking about John or Donnell here? Whose left hand are we talking about?
I'm talking about how you take the piano piece and put it onto the stand-up bass.
What right.
sort of transpositions involved?
Well, John has actually had several, over the years, several a surgery in his hands due to playing with my music. No,
Is there a way to demonstrate the answer?
Yeah, let's take this part, John. When we did the, and so Sebastian, that's a lot of notes, and John could play it. He has a technique to play that, but it gets kind of muddy if you put too many notes into the bass. So what we did is we simplified it and put three notes instead of the six. And here's how it sounds together. Yeah. So it's knowing the instruments and what makes them sound.
Well, it fooled my ears.
Yeah.
Sebastian, you know, there is a trick there, a kind
there's
of
a trick, and it's such a perfect combination. You know,
it's beautiful.
I can hear Bach doing it. Well, it sounds wonderful. I think Donald's been woodshedding. It's brilliant.
Sebastian, thank you for calling. Glad you can hear us up there. Where do you go from there musically? You where do you want to go from the Gunter piece?
Oh, gee, we could
maybe. Is there any way you can give us a taste of what you did to Hear the Lambs Are Crying?
Gee,
I mean, we don't have the orchestra here tonight.
Yeah, go to the Troy Music Hall and I'll be in New York at 9, 10, and 11 and hear it, and then let me know how it is and come down to Dizzy's and tell me.
That's a deal.
There you go.
Do you want to give us a taste of the Monk and Bach project?
Sure. Let's do this. This is a fun example of how people always ask me, what do they have in common? And what's interesting, I don't know if John has that up in his chart now, the Ugly Beauty, John? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why don't you just play the bass line, John, quickly there of the Ugly Beauty.
We got a couple of minutes to the break. Go for it.
Here we go. Now that bass line is directly from the bass player that played with Monk, Thelonious Monk. Now, John's going to play a bass line from Bach. It's a little prelude in C minor. And notice it sounds like Monk. Ready, John? And then we combine them together.
Bach learned a lot from Monk.
Yes, he did.
Yes, okay.
So do we have time? We can play a little bit of
Let's
it.
Let's do it.
Okay.
We're listening to Donal Fox with Ron Savage on drums, John Lockwood on bass. This is Open Source from PRI. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source. We're listening to improvisational music on the piano with Donal Fox, with Ron Savage on drums, John Lockwood on the string bass, and we're talking about it. We're talking about multi-musics. This is Thelonious Monk's Mysterioso, and we got to talk about it, Donal. We got to talk about when all the music in the stew suddenly becomes music to dance to, music to tap your foot to. What's that transition?
Chris, I was lost in the groove. What was that?
Well, that's exactly what I'm asking. When does it find that groove that takes off, makes us all want to dance?
Yeah, that was, Ron was doing some nice stuff there. What's that beat that we call there, Ron? Yeah, it's that beat.
it's a takeoff of a beat called Bomba, and I kind of put a little, slightly...
Yeah. That's all right. So it's a beat. It's a personal touch that he adds, and then we this great monk tune with the so simple with the thirds, and it just really you get your foot tapping. But that when you play music, you really want all those elements involved. You want the physical, and you want the mental. It combined. You want to sometimes emotionally feel like you want to cry. Sometimes you just want to be happy. You happy feet, and you want to have. I like to feel that, in the span of the music, say in the Dizzy's Club in the Jazz Lincoln Center, that people feel like dancing, and sometimes people feel like crying because the kindness in them, or they're just popping it. You want to have that range.
I want to ask you a question about the open source connection.
Yeah,
and that is simply that the music you play is drawn as music has almost forever been from everywhere. It's not copyrighted. It's not owned. It's not a personal possession. I mean, there's a genius in a particular phrase, but the forms and the ideas in music are kind of a community property,
mm-hmm.
as the ideas in art and maybe even in poetry. What is the intellectual property here? What needs to be protected? What is the ownership, especially in the internet age when we can hear all the world's music at a stroke of a key?
Yeah. Well, I think music, belongs to the people. It's definitely most democratic of most natural and great things that we can do as a culture, and it bridges people together. We've seen this over time. So the music's in the air. We're taking it. It exists already, and it filters through the musician. The imagination of the musician is what we come to listen to, right? Because essentially anyone can make some form of sound or some musical element.
Right?
But why do we want to go and hear a particular artist over a period of time and go back to the music and go back to Bach or go back to Miles or go back to Joe Lovano, whatever range that you're interested in? It's the imagination of that artist in taking those sources that are out there and then codifying and putting them in a package that the listener can really connect to. And that's where the talent comes in. So I think the intellectual properties that the artist that brings all those elements together in an artistic way, you know, deserves credit for bringing that to the public.
I like the idea not only of jumping, breaking the categories as you do it, but also rising above the sense that this is owned by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The internet, it strikes me, a different sort of metaphor of a kind of universal culture, but it seems to me to have a certain kind of analog kinship with the famous real book, which is the chord structures of the most famous jazz tunes in the world with some of the melodic treatments by the greatest all performers. It's an illegal book because it does violate all sorts of people's sense of ownership or copyright.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it is the absolute foundation of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And what we share, I mean, if we take a standard, a tune that everyone knows, what we look for is what that artist is bringing to My Funny Valentine, or whatever, you know, standard that one loves, is what are they bringing that's individual, what's of their personality to it.
When do you know that you've brought something uniquely yours to a musical idea?
It's sort of an internal feeling that you have embraced everything who you are as through your life as a person and in all your relationships and all the experiences you've had, and it feels that that's like a nice glove in your hand. You feel that's part of me.
Is it something you can demonstrate?
I mean, for example, I mean, in the abstract, this the headphone thing. And so if I'm going to play, I'm gonna, if the piano sounds different, the headphones.
Okay, you may take your headphone off.
Okay, thank you. I'll leave them on so I can talk to you, Chris. So let's take this, you know. And that idea of doing that is me, because it comes out of those interests I have. And somebody else may not even want to go there. Because they think, oh, that's wrong, or that's somebody, some other voice in their head tells them that they can't do that. But that's a combination of things. I call that the Chopin stride. It actually goes into a whole stride thing. And then, you know, I can take, and there's another side of my palette, which is more esoteric a little bit, but I think your listeners could follow the mood of this, you know.
Sounds like Claude Debussy Fox, maybe.
Yeah, it's mysterious.
Donald Debussy.
But, you know, pulling it. So it's the different emotions you want, just like, and you try to, there's that, after a time, there's a sound, just like I could walk down the street and hear John, Ron playing, or Louis Nash, or George Mraz, and you go, oh, you would know who's playing.
Okay, but there's a couple of things I want you to comment on. It seems to me the culture and the technology is moving in your direction, not only sort of the mixing of musics, the DJ effect, but also the iPod effect, in which everybody can put all kinds of music in a kind of their own personal concert of the day in their head. This seems to me a piece of the same kind of liberation that you're talking about, that you've mastered internally and in your chops.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the iPod's an interesting phenomenon that you know, when we were coming up, we had albums or CDs. We could put them on a shelf, look at the artwork, read the liner notes. Now you have this, you download an MP3 file. You may or may not know the title. You like the sound. It's on there. You start shuffling your iPod. and so a young person could go from, you know, Frank Sinatra to Xenakis to, you know, all blues.
Gregorian chant, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so what does that mean in the sense of one's listening taste and their palate? And it's a good thing in that the range is wider, but is there less discrimination, right, in judging how to listen? Only time will tell with that. But I think the listeners are going to be probably more open to musical experimentation and less closed because of that.
Well, it strikes me as that kids at least have available to them the experience that you had. I remember Chick Corea talking about his experience was listening to the Bartok string quartets, but you spoke, you know, Panamanian mother, Russian Jewish father. You had a full or a very wide spectrum in the house just as a toddler, right? And a lot of people can have it now on their iPods in a certain way.
They can. If they have at least, they can run into it mistakenly without knowing what they're downloading, or one can say you should check out Bartok, and they put in their search Bartok, not even know anything about Bela Bartok, and then they might go, well, that's kind of cool. There's no prejudice now. The boundaries have been broken that way. I'm thinking of setting up, you know, the next group we call the iPod Shuffle Trio.
Give us another musical example of where you're going and where you're at.
Oh, well, so many things. I mean, we could do headphones off.
Was tasty. What was that?
It was a brand new composition. First heard here in the Chris Lydon Open Source Show.
Well, that's great. Now, where did that begin, and how did you tell your guys where you were headed?
Well, this is an interesting example of chemistry and improvisational things. I mean, we took it about the air. I started with this, and I built off the harmony. And John was sort of looking at me and going, what is he doing? And smiling. But he's listening. He's listening. And then when I gave the pedal tone, I looked at Ron. He knew what to do with the drums. And you're communicating. It's just like language, like we're doing as we're speaking now. We don't have a script. Well, we did type out everything, didn't we?
No, we didn't. This is fascinating.
Yeah. And the music's very similar in that sense of language, of communicating that way, just like we're having a discussion. And so that was good to demonstrate that to the audience. And that's a beautiful thing to be able to carry on the conversation like that and feel that you're developing in the moment.
It's so fascinating. We once did a program with Roy Haynes and, the Panamanian pianist whose name suddenly...
Danilo
Perez, of course.
My buddy.
The whole conversation was about what is the pianist saying to the drummer and what is the drummer saying to the pianist. We've had a lot of these discussions also. What was Count Basie saying to Joe Jones or Walter Page or Freddie Green? And I said to Illinois Jacquet one time, it's too bad we didn't... And he said, that was a conversation, man. And he said, it's too bad we didn't know what they were saying. And he said, we know exactly what they were saying.
Yeah.
And he said, it was about love. It was about each other and the pleasure they had in the music.
Absolutely. Let's do a little bit of the opening of that invention again.
We're going to have to go out with your friend Scarlatti just half a minute or so.
Okay.
Can you make your point through that piece?
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Just to show you the rhythmical exchange that will go between the drummer and the pianist. I think the drummer, and you know, the drums come from Africa and come from the root and have shaped all of 20th century, 21st century music. You can't imagine without the drums. We would not have anything. You wouldn't have rock and roll, rhythm, blues. You wouldn't have any of the stuff that's out there now. Drums always there. Very important element.
And we got Scarlatti in there, too, at the keyboard.
We got Scarlatti in there.
Let's hear it.
Well, I'll do a little squat.
And is there something for the string bass player, too?
Yes, there is. Headphones off?
Scarlatti. Thank you, Donal Fox, John Lockwood, and Ron Savage. Open Source is produced in association with the University of Massachusetts at Lowell and WGBH Radio in Boston. The program is made possible by the Schooner Foundation, whose contributors support Physicians for Human Rights, promoting health by protecting human rights. www.phrusa.org. Our show was produced by David Miller, Brendan Greeley, Catherine Bidwell, Chelsea Mers, and Robin Amer. Ray Fallon and Robin Moore were our engineers. Mary McGrath is our executive producer. I'm Christopher Lydon. Join us next time for Open Source. Thank you, Donal Fox. That was fun.